Welcome to the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast, where we explore family offices, real estate, and the art of preserving legacies and wealth. I'm DJ Van Kuren, and I'm going to be utilizing my experience of investing on behalf of a number of prominent families and working directly for a number of prominent families on their real estate portfolio. I'm going to tap into my decades worth of experience in real estate investing and relationships with some of the most prominent family office leaders in the industry, academics from universities around the world, and industry experts and leaders in the real estate space. So whether you're a family member, family office executive, family office, or real estate enthusiast, the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast will empower you with knowledge and influential voices. I'm DJ Van Kuren, and this is the Family Office Real Estate Institute podcast. In this episode of Family Office Real Estate Insights, we speak with CEO Larry Wolf of Single Family Office Red Diamond on using consultants to make family office investments. So today we're speaking with Larry Wolf from Family Office, which is Red Diamond. We're also very fortunate to have him on our board, which is a very valuable asset for us at the Four Institute. Larry, thanks for being on Family Office Real Estate Insights.
Thanks for having me, DJ.
So if you could give us a little background first off on the family office, you know, where the wealth was created, and you've been there for quite a bit of time. So, you know, maybe what generation you're on. I think you were with the first gen and now you're down the line. So if you could take a minute to do that, that'd be great.
Sure. So I've been with the family office, Red Diamond, now for 22 years. But prior to that, I was a partner at Arthur Anderson in Cleveland. My client, who I eventually went over to run their family office, business was sold after being an operating company in the auto industry for 30 years, a tier one supplier of sensors and switches, the parts of a car you want to make, not stamping doors, but making airbag sensors, things like that. So that was sold in 1999, and not expecting to leave and go with them, but I suggested a family office. They loved the idea, embraced it, and one thing led to another, and I was offered the position. I never thought I'd leave Arthur Anderson, and neither did I think Arthur Anderson was going to go under 2 years later. So a lot of serendipity played out there. And here I've been for 22 years running that office. And we started, of course, then with Generation One. And now we actually have that generation is still alive. The patriarch passed, unfortunately, in 2004. But the matriarch is still alive, and she's 92 years old. And we have four generations in total. And so a lot has changed over that period of time.
Well, I'll tell you, if for you to have insight for a family office back in, I think you said 99, yeah, is pretty significant, because it really hasn't been a commonly known word for the last, and except for the last 7-8 years or so.
That's
and so
fair.
You obviously were well ahead of that. And, you know, it's interesting, too, is that when I explain about the family office space, I say usually 95% of the people fall into it. And I give an example, just like what happened to you, where they knew you, they were comfortable with you, they could trust you. And so they said, hey, come on in and you know, see what you can do to help out. Yeah. And I'm sure at the time there were some things that you know today that you didn't understand or know at the time.
No, you're so right. And your point is well taken there. When I suggested a family office, he said, a family what? You know, and of course, I had one client that was a family office, so I had a lot of experience with it. But, you know, you think you know your client, and then you come on board with them, and you find out you don't know your client. I mean, there was so much I learned, and just starting a family office from scratch was a learning curve that someone told me when I came on board that it'll take you 5 years to feel comfortable. And that was very, very fair.
Well, you start getting into different dynamics, right? When you have various family members, generations, and then, you know, you add wealth to it, and it can create, you know, some additional challenges or different type of dynamics that, you know, other things that you might have been working on didn't have that.
Well, and the whole family's looking at me like, who's the new guy? And why is he here? And with a lot of money comes suspicions, right? And yes, everyone wants to know, is this guy going to be trustworthy for us? You got to build that trust. And yes, and it takes a long time. And but I've certainly grown to be a part of a wonderful family. I always say I wouldn't trade our family for anybody's, with no knock on anybody else's family, but we have a good one. And there's only four of us. We had six people in the family office for a while, but there's four of us now. You know, family offices are very leverageable. You can oversee a lot of money with not so many people, depending on your approach.
Now, one of the things that I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when it comes to your real estate investing, you primarily focus on funds. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct.
And I would imagine that a lot of that has to do with what you just talked about, which is you only have four people. Yeah. Within the office. And when you're looking at all the various investment opportunities, you just don't have the bandwidth.
Well, and I think family offices do what they do best, right? And there's a much overused saying in the family office industry that if you've seen one family office, you've seen one family office. And if I would be an investment person, maybe I would have taken a different approach to what we do. But being a tax person, we do in-house taxes, in-house estate planning, financial planning, and we outsource, you know, to an investment advisor, our investment side of things. And I also created an investment advisory board to help me out as well.
Okay, so when it comes to the real estate funds, then is all of the deal flow, all of the opportunities that are presented to you all coming from the consultant?
90-something%. So it's not to say that if you were a manager and you knew me from my local country club or something, you couldn't pitch something to me and I wouldn't pass it along, let's say, or somebody over the years at a conference or something might meet me and I will pass along things that sound like they could be opportunities for us. But for the most part, they are recommending, you know, they don't have the full discretion to just put our money into funds. Myself, along with my advisory board, make decisions around it. But I would still say a high percentage of those decisions we embrace and have invested in over the years.
All right. So let's talk about this. I mean, I'll be honest with you. This is a topic that I didn't think we'd go into, but I am super, super happy to, because, you know, when with this evolution of the family office, people are like, okay, this is much easier to go into the family office. We don't have to worry about all these investment committees. We don't have to worry about all this, you know, red tape, bureaucracy, et cetera. We go to the family office, we get a decision, they write us a check, it's done. Well, obviously that is not the case. And these pension funds, endowments, they'll often use these type of consultants to help make those decisions, even if they do have people that are doing analysis internal. So with your situation, if somebody's looking, let's talk about a sponsor first off, somebody that has an opportunity, investment opportunity. So they're saying, well, I'm just going to talk to Larry. Larry's going to make the decision and then we're done. Tell me a little bit of what that process looks like. If you did get a deal brought to you and you're like, okay, this warrants a further look by our consultant.
Yeah. So thankfully our consultant is happy to take a look at things like that. And so I, you know, and even they will acknowledge that 15-20% of things on their platform have come from clients. So, you know, they're not afraid to take a look at something that might be a great, you know, investment for their platform for others as well. So pass it along. You know, they're pretty quick at knowing whether it passes muster and has potential. And they'll do a write-up for me as to their thoughts. If they're going to discard it, they could probably make a phone call to me and say, Larry, the leverage is way too much. We don't like this sector right now. We're just not looking at these things. You know, not to say that I couldn't on my own, you know, talk to my advisory board and say, what do you all think of this? And should we do something? I always view that as walking a little bit out on a gangplank. You know, I don't like to do things on my own, let's say. Very rarely have we, unless the family is really embracing something for other reasons. But they will come back with some type of a write-up for me to review that I'll pass on to the advisory board again and make a decision around that investment.
One of the big things that you're using them is their ability to do the deep dive, the due diligence, right?
And with strong people in all sectors, not just real estate. So they do have one person in charge of the real estate, you know, area who's spent his lifetime in it. That can give incredible feedback to me on things I would never think about, and good feedback.
What and on your investment advisory board that's within the family office, do you have family members that are a part of that?
Yeah, my advisory board meetings, I have one family member who is on the advisory board, comes to all the meetings. I invite all family members to every advisory board meeting. They're all welcome. I can honestly tell you, DJ, investments is not their bailiwick. So yeah. I think they have, to the extent, I think pretty much every family member has attended a meeting by now. They enjoy the opportunity, but it's not a passion, let's say.
So, okay. So what is, from that perspective, and you know, at the Family Office Real Estate Institute, one of the questions we'll have is, has to do with education, right, for younger gens, but also participation. And how many of these family members want to participate? And it's, if you're at 50%, you're a pretty good number. I mean, I went to a conference, this was a number of years back, pre-COVID, and this girl walks in, because I got a coffee, went in the other room, had to make a phone call, and she's wearing her workout clothes, right? And I said, so, you know, are you here with a family? She said, yes. I said, why are you here? And she goes, well, I figure it's probably time I start understanding, you know, some of the financial components, because I just teach, aerobics right now or something like that. But that's a very important part when you're passing and transferring wealth in the hands of younger gens. So is that something you think you'll make mandatory in the future? Or have you thought about that a little bit?
I have thought about having a paid third generation, you know, member of the advisory board, where I don't right now. Yeah. Funny how sometimes getting paid brings somebody to the table more often, right?
Right.
A little incentive. And I know who that would already be, because we do have a grandchild who already comes to almost all of our meetings.
So he has an interest. That's great.
Yeah, he has an interest, and he enjoys the meetings, and he's a student of the game on his own, started doing some investment work on his own. So I think there's an easy decision around who that would be. I think because we are in Cleveland, Ohio, and Mansfield is where some of the family members are, Aspen is some of the family members, it's not the easiest thing in the world. We're not right in someone's backyard to just pop into a meeting. Sometimes has some issues around people attending, but I do want to push for more attendance at meetings, if at all possible. And I can say that Zoom calls were easier when we went to Zoom during COVID. You know, I got more people to pop onto and attend a meeting, but there's nothing like in person, unfortunately. I would rather have in-person meetings if at all possible.
Yeah, it's but you know, the good thing is that if you do have a family member that is wants to be a part of it, that's much different, right? Because then he's more apt to embrace everything and to really dive in rather than to say, okay, I have to be here, right? Yeah. So let's go back to the real estate component. So, you know, a lot of families, categorize them in a number of different areas. And one of the main reason that we were talking about with the funds is because they just don't have those resources, right? And so it's easier to say, I can review a fund manager better than each individual deal. So in your situation, you're using a consultant as an extension of your team to help with that.
That's exactly
what's
right.
That experience like, and how did you make the decision to use the firm that you're using? So if a family listening right now is like, I hadn't thought about that. What was that process like?
Yeah. So I knew I wanted, already having a client of mine at Arthur Andersen that was a family office, I learned a little bit about what I wanted already in advance. And that would be, I wanted open architecture. I didn't want anyone that was going to push their own product upon me. So I knew the people to reach out to start the process and then whittle, let's say, five people down to two. And then I begged my boss to sit through meetings. He hated this type of stuff. And it turned out we had several family members sit through the process. And we eventually decided on Great Court out of Pittsburgh. And you know, Great Court was Midwest. There seemed to be a lot of the same type of values around, you know, an instant fit, let's say, for us. And we've been with them for a long, long time. It's worked out very, very well.
And so it's great to hear that there, in that situation, there were a lot of family members participating because, you know, that, I think that's important to know. Now, is this group, are they charging based upon assets or a strictly a, you know, a consultant type? This is what we charge annually or monthly for their services.
So they do have a fee scale, which, okay. You know, personally, you could take that. And of course, that incentivizes them. Some people say yes. To drive it, but I don't know that their incentive isn't there if you go a different direction. I would rather work off a fixed fee. It's always how I've wanted to do things. And actually right now we have a fixed fee that's in place with an inflation adjustment. So we don't even have to renegotiate. It just keeps bumping up as we move forward. And we're content with that for now, let's say.
So you're not doing a percentage of assets. You're doing it based on a fixed fee.
Fixed fee that adjusts for inflation, right?
You know, I personally think that's the way to go in the sense where, even on the multifamily side, if they're going to outsource and not have somebody in house like yourself, you can go a percentage, which is really more of an RIA because they're not going to get into the legal components and. Yeah. Bill pay or whatever the case is, or you do have, you know, fixed fees, which are, you pay X amount a month. You can ask me anything you want to answer. I'll give you direction. I don't care if you do this investment or not, because I get paid one way or another.
Well, and you're so right. And I can tell you it's feast and famine. You know, there are times we're talking all the time and there's times yes. We don't need to talk at all. So
that's right.
And no one's worried about running up a bill on a phone call, right?
That's right.
And I have no problem calling them or having them come to see me or whatever it might be. I know my fee is my fee.
Right. And so when are you totally relying on them then as to either markets or property types, or are you providing some of that thought with them?
Well, my advisory board, two outsiders with tons of experience in the investment space. There's no doubt. I didn't look for yes people on my advisory board. I looked for people with input. And yeah. I certainly was not a student of the game early on to you know, I wasn't an investment person. But I get a lot of input from my advisory board and pushback, let's say, on why aren't we looking at this? Have we thought about that? And my meetings are, I would say, very good intellectual conversations. And a lot comes out of them, a lot of follow-up, a lot of thought on what we might be looking at, especially in times where markets have stress. Mm-hmm. And they love those meetings as well. They say they enjoy the meetings because they like having other people, you know, in that game, give their input to them on what they think should be done. And so it's a very good give and take relationship.
So have you, what would you say your average return on real estate has been over the last number of years?
You know, I don't know that I could pinpoint real estate, but I could certainly say our alternative space in total has almost consistently fallen somewhere between 10 and 20%, you know, a few outliers one way or another, maybe let's say over all those years, knock on wood. I mean, it's been our best performing asset class, you know, the alt space. I do think, you know, in the space of high net worth family offices there are people out there like Great Court and many others that only talk to you if you have $200 million, let's say, or something more than that, and only deal with, you know, people of that wealth that can scour the world for best in class, right? And I think for what you pay, you expect to get and find best in class real estate, private equity, venture, whatever you might be going into, right? And I think that's actually, you know, the brunt of what your fee is for. It's not for indexing, you know, for putting equity indexes in place or things like that. I think my fee is far more slanted towards my alternative investments.
So, and do you, and you may not from your last comment, but do you know approximately how much of a portfolio you've allocated to real estate?
I do. You know, and it's changed over time. I think right now we're at an 8% target.
Okay.
And we're below it. We're not at it right now. And we'll get there, but it's, we've, you know, funny part is, you know, I know you're a real estate guy, and we've always been low, and yet we've moved that number from 5 to 8. We're probably at 5, 6 right now, something like that. I think we've moved that number up as a target. Graycourt has moved that number up as a target.
That's interesting, because from our annual study, we're about to start our 5th year of the largest family office real estate investing study actually in the world. And the average allocation last year was about 24.5% for a family's portfolio. A lot of that has to do with, you know, how the returns have been and whatnot. But it's also because of the type of, you have the tangible asset. You can't just sell it, you know, so you've got to hold on to it a little longer, a little different with a fund.
Well, I was just going to say, I think if you look at endowment models, right, which is more what we are, we're more of an endowment-esque investment. Yep. And if I look at endowments in town and I see their allocations, you know, I just saw the Cleveland Clinic and their endowment. You can see what people do with their money. We're probably far more in line with that than someone who's doing direct investing, especially if they have a background in real estate. And there's an awful lot of family offices that are
a lot
that they made their money in real estate.
Yeah, they have. So are you doing any, are you doing private funds? Are you doing REITs? Are you doing...
We have not done REITs. Everything's private funds. And I would say we're in... gosh, probably somewhere between 5 and 10 funds right now on the real estate side.
Okay. And do you have an endowment by chance, or a foundation? I mean,
we have a foundation.
Okay.
Small foundation.
Okay. And is that any of that money invested in real estate?
It is not. It is all equities.
It's all equities.
A small piece of bonds for whatever we think our current spending might be.
Got it. Yeah. Cause what I've found is that you have, when there's real estate in both, you actually have more of REITs that are used on the real estate side and the foundations than you do in the, you know, the private side, I guess, per se. And
well, I think, you know, I think a lot of people use real estate for income purposes, right? And we have a philosophy that real estate's not a solution for everything for us. I mean, I think we get our income elsewhere. Our real estate is almost entirely viewed as a equity-driven return investment is what we're looking for. Opportunistic, you know, situations.
Got it. So then a lot of these funds, do you have any evergreen kind of funds, or are they all, you know, they end in 6 to 8, 10 years?
Originally, we got into an open-ended core real estate fund. One in the US, one in Europe. 2008 and 9 came along. We ended up getting out of both of them. One better off on our returns than the other. Europe took a pretty bad hit for that. So, and no longer in core, let's say. And I don't think we've passed on core because we don't think it's a good investment. We've solely passed on core because we think that there's more opportunity for us to go into niches and opportunistic places where we can get better returns.
So here's a question, not knowing what you're paying your consultant as of right now, but assuming that that money could end up paying for an in-house person, right? Who all they do is due diligence and that's what they're doing. They're just, why not do that? Instead of a,
because that's one person, right? So, you know, I it would be hard to believe one person could be so well-rounded that they would know
that's true
no real estate, no venture, no everything. And if, you know, you look at the back office of Gray Court and how many bodies and analysts and everything they have over there. And then they got one person focused on real estate with a team with him too, you know, below him, but one person at the top that we deal with on real estate decisions. I think I get the breadth and depth of a team. And I do think if you get into a $3 billion family office that has a desire to strongly, you know, use real estate as a space they want to be in, you could hire 3-4 people, build out a team. But you got to have those people in there that if you are going to actually build out a space and then you want to foreclose on somebody and you're going to take the keys back and you're going to do all kinds of things, you better have that expertise or know how to do those type of things. You know, so with 4 people, we have incredible leverage that we're only writing checks and receiving checks. Right. And it makes our office, you know, able to function with a small staff and yet take care of a lot of assets.
And that makes a lot of sense, you know, because I was thinking, okay, one asset type, but obviously when you're going across the board for those services, that makes a significant difference. And, you know, it's the families like the Michael Dells, the Bloombergs, the, you know, the Perots that will have their own platform where they will have typically higher institutional type people that are just managing that specific area. But once again, it depends on how many assets are within the family. And but then
you have to ask yourself, can you do better in-house than what somebody as an outsider that can do with a ton of experience investing in funds who that's all they do, you know, so they have a team of real estate experts doing one thing. It's all they've done their whole life. That's who you're trying to beat, right? That's who you're up against. And granted, we got to pay the carry, right? So that's where people say, all right, so bringing people in house is you saying that that's your management fee and carry that you're trying to bring in house to beat that same return.
Well, it goes back to what you said initially too, is the ability to leverage, right? Yeah. So now it's a matter of you're leveraging, you just have the people, small team that you have. And I would imagine you have one point of contact with the consultant, but yet they're dealing with all these other people.
They are. And I've gotten to know a lot of our managers. We have a manager come speak at every advisory board meeting. Okay. So over time, we have made an effort to meet a lot of our managers.
That's how did that come about? That is I haven't really heard that before about the managers coming and speaking.
I guess I knew it was happening in the endowment world, or that certain, you know, people here in town would meet their managers over time. Yep. And so when I created the advisory board, you know, I would lean in to Gray Court and ask them who might be able to come speak at this month's meeting. And it's worked really, really well. That's actually a very enjoyable piece of our meeting to have my board sit there and question, you know, the manager on what their philosophy is. And back to your earlier point, it's a great education for the family members who are in attendance to learn a little bit about one of our managers or a space that we're invested in.
Well, also the getting to know the person, right?
Absolutely.
Because it is a relationship business, and you can, it goes back to what you said about in-face meetings instead of Zoom, because you just get a different feel, right? And you can really say, okay, you know, even if you had a bad feeling, you could be like, something's going on the way he's talking about this, or this guy is really dialed in, right?
And I think, you know, more often than not, depending on, you know, the time of the meeting, there's always something ripe for who might be the right person to be coming right now.
Yes.
Because of what's happening in the marketplace. Why don't we, you know, bring so-and-so in to speak because we just made an additional allocation to them or whatever. So it works out very well.
Great. Well, listen, I really want to thank you for the time you've taken to chat here. I think that, you know, this whole, when we originally were going to talk, I was going to talk about funds specifically, but I think that this component of using a consultant, a lot of families don't necessarily do that unless they're using somebody like a BMO who has all of that back office infrastructure that they're leveraging across the board of all the families, right? Wow. And consultants are very well known in the institutional space, but they're becoming more and more utilized in the family office space.
Well, I think it's, there are sizable family offices, and I've gotten to know the space very well, that are, I tell them, don't be penny wise and pound foolish, you know, that they think they can do things in house and they're saving that fee, because the fees aren't cheap, you know, to get a good advisor. But if you only took the time to meet an advisor and get to know what they know, you would quickly figure out that you're not that smart in all aspects of investing to go out there in the world, especially if you're only investing in your own backyard and you only know, you know, Cleveland, Ohio, or Ohio for investing, where we're invested in Asia and emerging markets and all kinds of things that provides opportunities for us to make good returns for the family.
You know, I'm glad you brought up that one point about, you know, fees and being penny pound, you know, or penny foolish. And that is very relevant within the family office space. And it blows me away, because you have these people, patriarch, matriarch, that spent their whole life building this big business. They have an exit, which obviously they were successful, and it was millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, billions, whatever the case is. And then once they create the family office, it's like they forgot they used to have quarterly meetings, and they'd have agendas, and they'd hire the best people, and right? And all of a sudden it's like, okay, now you're wanting not to spend this money. And in real estate, you know, this goes along other investments too, but in real estate, what a lot of people over the years don't really understand is that you're dealing with a lot. If you're really down at that property level, I mean, you could end up having issues with tenants. You could have lawsuits you're dealing with because of the location. You could have flooding issues. You could have supply. You have so many things that makes it that you have to deal with in order to actually create those returns, right? Rather than saying, well, I don't want to pay. Yeah. And I think that, you know, you don't want to overpay, but it's a fine line. But
there have been meetings I walk out of, take 2008, 2009, when the crash was happening, and you have an advisory board, you have Great Court, everyone's sitting around having an engaging conversation, but at a time when there's immense fear, right? Yeah. And everyone thinks the market's crashing, they're sitting there saying, oh my gosh, the opportunity set right now to go into MLPs is incredible. And the opportunity to go and close down bond funds is incredible. And I'm sitting there not knowing these, you know, these spaces, these things I have no awareness of, getting an education that, you know, I walk into a meeting with fear. I walk out thinking we've got to get our money into these spaces as quickly as possible, because And you know, they're saying the rich get richer. There's a reason the rich get richer, right? Because they know where to put their money in times of stress. And the same with real estate. There's opportunities in places in real estate to put your money in times of stress and whatever it might be. And having an advisor who's been around the block for a long time, you know, provides comfort in all times that this is what we need to be doing, or doing nothing at times, right? You know, time like this, we haven't sold through this period of stress right now.
That's right.
We're just moseying on through it, thinking better days will come. You know, there's been no panic, let's say, in what we're going through right now.
Well, I'll tell you, back in, you're fortunate for that, those thought processes you had there in the downturn, because the majority of families waited until after things really started taking off because they were worried, right? Yeah. Today, there's much more of a understanding and wanting to pounce on some of these opportunities. I will tell you, however, is that we will be seeing distress in the multifamily space, in some hospitality space, on the debt side and whatnot. So we are going to be coming into that ability, you know, into that area. But once again, it comes back to having that confidence to say we need to take advantage of it. But that comes from education. That comes from people that have either lived through those cycles or are deep into it, right? Because you can make money in the stock market when it's up and when it's down. You can make money in real estate when it's up, when it's down, but you have to know it. And each individual area is a specialty.
Yeah. Real estate, you know, we're very conservative across most facets of our investing. We don't take on high leverage, even in the real estate space. We're not looking for a manager who's going to aggressively lever up a product. And we're big on entry point matters in everything we go into. Real estate, we want to find that person who's, you know, find a good entry point. That's a great part of your return, right? Was knowing when to get in.
Well, you make money when you buy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that is a big philosophy of Gray Court. And I embrace that. That makes all the sense in the world. So when they think it's time to go into a sector we're not playing in, I would hope we're making a good decision on that buy side decision, right?
Well, that's, you know, the reason why you work with people that you trust and you feel that they have that under deep understanding and able to give you that insight. You know, at the end of the day, you guys are making the decision.
Yes.
But you still need the right information to be able to make those decisions, right?
Absolutely.
And that's what that a consultant or any professional, right? When you were just providing the services you were before the family, the same thing, right? They were looking to you on your expertise.
Yeah.
On what you can do. So, Larry, I just want to thank you so much for being on the show. It's like I said, it sort of went a little different direction, but this is absolutely fantastic. We're you're obviously have quite a bit of wealth of knowledge from the longevity that you've had with the family. It sounds like you'll be there for quite some time. You're not going anywhere. And you know, we really appreciate you being a part of the board at the Four Institute. And as we continue to grow, we're gonna try to leverage this expertise that you have and everything else. So thank you so much for being on the show today. And we look forward to talking to you again in the future.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.